It's time now for Bucks Blue with your host, Lower Makefield Chief of Police, Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome to Bucks Blue, WBCB, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM, and streaming anywhere in the world via the internet. Stephen, today we have a guest, one of my colleagues from Bucks County, not originally from Bucks County, but from Bucks County now, just like me, a transplant. We have Chief Dave Scarrato from the Buckingham Township Police Department and formerly Chief of the Lower Moreland Township Police Department, the other LMTPD in the area. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you inviting me on.
So I want to start a little bit in the education realm. You hold a master's degree in public administration and hold two master's degrees, one in criminal justice as well. Now I really feel like an underachiever, Steve. What motivated you to pursue both of those degrees, and how are you using them in your job as a police chief?
Well, back when I was looking at master's programs, there were a bunch of different things I was looking at. One was I had a fairly young family, so okay. I had, you know, three children between the ages of like 1 and 8 at that time when I was in looking for my master's program. And so I was looking for something that I could do a lot of my work online. So I was looking at online programs, and then I was also looking at kind of like, what's very common in our region is a lot of people use like the public safety degrees, and I wanted to put myself in a position where I got a broader education, mm-hmm. and that something that would separate me for any future opportunities I would have. So that was really what excited me about that program. And it was basically 48 credits over, you know, I think I did it in 3.5 years.
Wow.
It was a lot of work, but it worked out really well. And I used actually the capstone of that whole program wound up being a staffing analysis I did for my last employer.
Okay.
And we used that to expand the police department and, you know, introduce a robust community policing program and all that kind of stuff. So that was really the drive for me.
And I know that perspective you're coming from. When I went back to get my graduate degree, I said, I'm not doing it in criminal justice. I pursued a degree in education instead. So it was the same type of thinking, you know, broadly. Where'd you do your undergraduate?
So, I started my undergraduate when I was in the Air Force, University of Maryland, Tokyo. I was stationed in Japan. And then I took a number of years off after I got out of there. I worked at the VA.
Okay.
And eventually I knew I had to get back to school. So I wound up finding an online program called Kaplan University at the time.
Yep, I know about
that. And did my entire bachelor's program through there. And it's pretty funny. So my daughter was born in 2006, and that's when I went back for my bachelor's. And it's funny, I started 2 months before she was born because I knew, I said, if I wait to get back to school after I have our first child, it'll never happen.
So. And that's what I did. I went back to graduate school right after I had my first child.
Yeah.
It was very, very challenging, I got to say that.
But, yes.
Let's shift a little bit into your technical training.
Sure.
I hate to call it technical training. It's more leadership training, right? Mm-hmm. We have the big three. We have the FBI National Academy. We have Northwestern. And then we have Command and Leadership Programs. You went to Northwestern's University School of Staff and Command.
Yes.
What was that experience like, first of all, and then what were some of the lessons that you use on a regular basis as a police chief of police?
Well, it was a great experience. So I was able to get into Philadelphia's, the one where Philadelphia PD hosted, and I was lucky to have Ben Salem PD, current Sheriff Horan at the time, public safety director, and like half of his command staff were like 9 people from Ben Salem there. And then I was born and raised in Philadelphia, so I felt very comfortable in that environment. So for me, it was great. I got to meet my dad, was around at the time, so I got to meet my dad for lunch a couple times.
Okay.
My brother Tony was still alive. I was able to meet him for lunch a couple times while I was down there. So in that aspect, it was a great experience for me. As far as technical, just a lot of those different aspects. I wrote things during that program. The biggest thing is during that program for my staffing study, which is part of the way Northwestern works, is through the entire course, you get all these different skill sets that they teach you, and then you're supposed to apply it to some challenge within your organization to make it better. That's the whole premise. So basically, it's like a five-month study period with the point of coming up with some solution for your agency, which is something that, you know, I'm kind of like a driven person when it comes to, you know, give me yeah,
that,
give me a topic and I'll run after it. So for me, for years and years, I was heavily involved in mixed martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and began teaching in the police academies. Mm-hmm. I run all the police academy DT for Temple and Monco. So at home, trying to get any of our local agencies to this day is still a challenge, but we're finally moving in the right direction. Implementing a ongoing, regular, cohesive control tactics program that's safe. So basically what I did is, through my staffing study, I created a whole program all designed for, you know, instituting ongoing control tactics training. I wound up turning that study into a course that I got approved through MOPEC, which was how to implement safe physical training. So it's basically a safety course for instructors on how to do those type of programs. And so that's basically what I used that for. And then, unfortunately, the leadership at the time was still kind of a little old school. And, you know, they let me put my pinky toe in the water, but they really didn't let me fly with that program that I wrote. But the way it worked out was, that was 2014.
Okay.
4.5 years later, I took over as chief of police, and within a couple of months, I implemented that full-throated program and ran it for almost 6 years at Lower Morna.
And I think every cop around the state feels like they know you, even if they don't know you, because we see you on the defensive tactics control training videos every year, right? And
yes.
When I was coming over here, a couple of my officers said, "Who do you have on today?" And I said, "Chief Scarrato," and they fondly remember you teaching them when they were recruits, Officer Montemanero.
Yep.
He said he used to twist me into a pretzel every day.
Yep.
And then Officer Konow, who just recently joined us, also spoke fondly of your training. So
that's good to hear. Yeah, I've twisted many people into pretzels. I do enjoy that.
Well, hopefully I won't experience that when we get off the radio or in any one of these commercials. What are... you served in the United States Air Force, right?
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about that. First and foremost, thank you for your service. I love when
you.
I have veterans on here.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell us what you did in the United States Air Force, what your MOS was, where you were assigned, that type of thing.
So I was, you know, 17-year-old kid, tested to get into the Air Force, you know, did pretty well. I wanted to go in law enforcement, so I had a desire to pursue law enforcement when I was a kid. And so I tried to sign up for a guaranteed position, and, you know, my recruiter was very, you know, honest and open, I think. And he basically told me, well, you know, we don't have any openings in LE specialty, but we have this other specialty. It's called SS, Security Specialist. And it's the same as police. You get a badge, you carry a gun. It's basically the same job. So they gave me that guaranteed position for an 8-year enlistment, 4 years active, 4 years inactive reserve. And then what happened was, it was basically, I was guarding planes and priority resources. You know, I had the potential to guard nuclear weapons. I didn't have to where I was stationed. And then I did presidential support. So the Emperor of Japan died while I was stationed there, and there was an executive mission there, and we had to guard Air Force One, Air Force Two, things like that. So basically I was a, you know, security police in the Air Force.
Right.
And then years later, after I got out, they merged those two specialties. So now there's just security police. So there's no longer two separate MOSs for that position.
And what experiences from there, and it sounds like a vast amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you bring back to policing that made policing easier when you got in?
Well, there were a lot of things. One is, if you look at our young people coming into the field that don't have law enforcement experience, I learned command presence, how to wear a uniform, how to look good in a uniform, how to carry yourself in a professional way, how to talk to people, how to talk to superiors, all those different things. So it definitely prepares you for that. And then from a law enforcement standpoint, I wound up becoming a SWAT officer. I did 20 years as an entry on the SWAT team. So many of the skills I learned in security specialist which was like CERT teams and their ART teams, mm-hmm. which were response teams, the tactics, how to enter rooms, room entries, you know, doing different tactical maneuvers. So so it was a good blend of, you know, I didn't really get that true law enforcement experience, but those aspects benefited me really well. And then when I wound up getting out of the Air Force, actually I got out under an early out program, so I just missed the first Gulf War. And my mom had been sick with cancer, so it turned, it like worked out really well where I maintained my enlistment, but I was able to be home a year earlier. And it wound up being a very important year because my mom passed away the following year. So I actually had a year with my mother. So, you know,
things
amazing.
Sometimes work out for
they
a
sure,
reason.
They sure seem to, you know.
And did you learn to speak Japanese at all?
I mean,
you
were there I did. For a while. I did Nihongo Wakarimasu, that means I understand Japanese, but I don't. So I would
so
actually say, I would say Nihongo Wakaranai, that means I do not speak Japanese. So those are the few, but it was 35 years ago. So even my Italian's a little better, but
all right,
not much, but a little better.
So you're quasi-bilingual in a few areas.
Yes, yes.
Why don't we take a break here? We come back, we'll continue our talk about your entry into law enforcement.
Sounds good.
Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214.
Here's another What's It Worth Antique Minute. Ever wonder how the 21-gun salute originated? The 21-gun salute is a tradition often used at military and law enforcement funerals where seven rifles each fire three blanks for a 21-gun salute. But gun salutes have been used by many different countries in many different formats for centuries. Why 21 guns for the United States and not 20 or 22? One theory has it that shortly after the founding of our country in 1776, someone realized that when you add the four numbers in 1776 together, 1 plus 7 plus 7 plus 6, you get 21. Thus, the 21-gun salute was recommended as a tribute to the year our country was founded, and it's been a U.S. tradition ever since. What's it worth? Back in 2014, Heritage Auctions sold a 1776 Continental Currency dollar for $1.41 million. Auctioneer, appraiser, and home downsizing expert Mike Ivakovich hosts What's It Worth? Ask Mike the Appraiser radio show on WBCB 1490.
We now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, September 2025, WBCB, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM. And Stephen, we're back. We're in studio with Chief Dave Scarrata from the Buckingham Township Police Department. And before we went to break, the chief was nice enough to share some of his military experience in the U.S. Air Force, including presidential details when he was assigned in Japan. So I'm going to continue along the military line of questioning, Chief. And
sure.
We have a lot of veterans that go into the military because they have the end in mind. They'd like to become police officers when they get out.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for those men and women who are going into the military for that reason while they're in? And then what advice would you have for the people who served our country that are now getting ready to come out and want to enter law enforcement.
Yeah, so I think those going in is sort of what I did, try to identify fields that are going to really prepare you for that next step. So, you know, depending on what branch you get into, working with a good recruiter, mm-hmm. you know, to actually get into law enforcement and military or military police. I mean, I think that is really beneficial. And if you can't get a guaranteed position in those fields, there are certainly adjacent fields that you might be able to find, like security specialists back in the
right,
in the
right.
80s. So that would be some of the advice I would give to them. And then, you know, take advantage of, you know, one of the challenges, again, societally for us is, you know, we come from a longstanding tradition of paramilitary-ist law enforcement. And so that part will serve you well. So just make sure you're learning that aspect of policing. And then once you get out, there's a lot of different things you can do. The advantage for vets are, you know, civil service positions. That's how I mm-hmm. that's how I got my job. Within getting home from Japan, I immediately took a job or applied for the VA police because I always wanted to be law enforcement. I had applied for Philadelphia and SEPTA and housing at the time, but there were no current lists, so it was a little slow process. The VA
and I came out at the same time as you. It uh-huh. was, I mean, for the young people today, it was vastly different.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Why don't you describe like, what we went through?
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you the Lower Moreland experience, the sort of Montgomery County Consortium test that I took in 1992, there were over 750 applicants for Lower Moreland. So that's not even the bigger agencies. Agencies like Abington and Lower mm-hmm. Merion and Upper Merion that were on that same list, they were up to, you know, 1,000, 1,100 applicants. So, you know, I just did a test and I had 21 applicants.
Everywhere I went in Jersey was like four digits.
Yep.
And you know there's only two vacancies.
Yep.
And you're looking around. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I used to look around going, I'm going to have to win the lottery.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's just statistically that yeah. unlikely, right?
Yeah, I was lucky. You know, again, being a vet mm-hmm. and having that opportunity. And so those that aren't familiar with regular civil service positions are a couple different factors that a lot of people don't realize. One is you get 10 points on top of your total score. So you go in, you have an oral interview, which is a certain percentage. You have a written test, which is a certain percentage. And the way civil service rules work is they're bound by, like, they can only take so many of the top scores. So if I'm a vet and I score, like, I think back in the 90s, I scored a 92.5 in my written. So then I got an 87.5 in my oral, which gave me a 90. And then I got 10 points on top of that. So my score was 100.
So, which is great, but based on those civil service points, somebody could have a 102.
Right.
Like 100
well, that's
is the cap,
that's
right?
True. Yeah. That's true. And luckily for me, I wound up being number one and then got that position. The other interesting thing is, which is a benefit to vets, is if you're the only veteran and you're in the top three, you mm-hmm. could be number three. Especially now, the laws have evolved over the last bunch of years. They must pick you first. So in those civil service positions, it's a real benefit to be a vet. So you're kind of starting with that.
Pennsylvania has it right?
Yep.
Because I was in Yardley Borough and it had civil service, and we followed all the exact rules you just identified. When I was in New Jersey, veterans' preference only applied during time of conflict.
Uh-huh.
And when I was coming on in the early 90s, like the last conflict mm-hmm. was the Vietnam War.
Right.
So really no one was getting civil service preference, a veteran's preference. I believe in veteran's preference. Mm-hmm. I believe in it for entry. I believe in it for promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we can do something for the 1% of people that decide to put on a uniform in defense of this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
You joined the police department in 1992, if I'm correct, right?
Yep. January 92, I started at Lower Moreland. So
I know you wanted to do it before you went into the military.
Mm-hmm.
What was it that drew you to law enforcement, and when were you joined the law enforcement?
Well, it's funny. So I grew up in, you know, an Italian-American household in Northeast Philly. Went to father's.
Despite
drugs.
My last name, so did I.
All right.
My father was an only child.
I sensed it. I sensed I could hear, like, the accent. Your ancestry was calling out at me. I grew up in Philadelphia. My dad was military. There, you know, I had several, the Faseys. So my dad's mom's side of the family, we had like five uncles that all fought in World War II.
Okay.
In fact, one of them's photographed at the, going to forget the name of it, but one of the concentration camps at the museum in D.C. There was a photograph of one of my uncles at Dachau concentration camp. So pretty long history, military. Yeah. So I think it was the uniform thing. But then I did have a great experience. You'll probably appreciate this. My parents and I was a little boy. My parents were taking me to a wedding in New Jersey. One of our relatives get married. And we were on the AC Expressway and our car broke down. So a state trooper, a New Jersey state trooper, pulled over and helped us, helped my parents, called a tow truck, and then we were waiting for the tow truck. So, he's like, oh, your son wants to come back to the police car. I'll show him the inside of the police car and all that kind of stuff. So that was, like, a great experience for me, like, very imprinted in my brain from when I was a child. And he took me in the car, and he showed me, like, how everything worked and all that stuff. And I kind of feel like that was one of those big moments in my life that really made me idolize. On top of that, and the only problem with that was my dad used to always point out, like, when I would talk about being a police officer, a kid, he's like, just so you know, David, you can never be a New Jersey State Trooper because you're too short. All right, so, unfortunately, the New Jersey State Police had a strict rule. I think you had to be 6 foot.
Yep.
So,
for a while, that rule was in effect.
Even with high heels, I'm not making 6 foot. So.
But they do have the coolest uniforms.
Yes, they do. And my dad wanted to keep me grounded, so he let me know I couldn't do that. But that was one of those experiences. And then also growing up in a Philadelphia neighborhood, there, we used to hang at the Holmesburg Library. That was, I don't know if it was good or bad, but that's where we used to hang out. But there was an officer, I think his name was Gallagher from Philadelphia PD, and he would come and walk through and come and talk to us and stuff like that. So I had some good experiences like that as a child that kind of, I think that's something that I want to pursue. And just like the whole uniform and kind of believe being part of something bigger than myself, serving, a community. Those things just meant the world to me. So, I just had an attraction from a young age to do this type of service.
I just love both those stories. I really do, because I believe that we are recruiters every time we're out there, right? So have you placed that? You were touched both times as a young child. Mm-hmm. During your long, long career, how many kids have you done that to, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you sculpt the police departments you have run to do the same thing.
Absolutely, and community policing is the way we do that. And mm-hmm. I mean, I was blessed. There's a police officer in Bristol Township who got class president of his class at the Monco Police Academy, and I taught him in the academy, but I was friendly with his father, who was a judge, who got sick and died when he was young. And then I had an opportunity to, I heard that he was going down the wrong path. So, as a kid, going through tough times after losing a parent. So I showed up at his house and I knocked on the door and I said, yeah, I think I need to talk to him. And he woke him up out of his sleep after a night he probably did not want to get up early. And I took him for a ride. And, I never really thought that much of it. And I could probably list 100 experiences similar to that I experienced. But I forgot all about that. Mm-hmm. And at his graduation, he told that story. And that was like, yeah. I think that's kind of the key as leaders today. Like, maybe we don't spend enough time and effort in espousing our beliefs to our people on a regular basis to say, listen, like, this is, because I just did this yesterday with a few of my officers. Like, you got into this for a reason. You took mm-hmm. an oath. You didn't just say, I want a job. You took an oath to serve and protect other people, and that means putting a good effort into it. And at least nowadays, we're well compensated. It's not like the old days mm-hmm. where, cops made $6,000 a year. When I started, I think my salary at Lower Mortimer, when I started, was like $36,000 a year. And it was even worse in the military and the VA. I think VA I was making like 25 or 23,
but it's interesting because I have these talks as well, and I think it's so important that we have contact with these. I always say, you show me a cop and I'll tell you about their chief,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's we set the tone for the entire police department. And I think that's obvious. What you're doing in Buckingham is enormous. So I really, really appreciate your view on that. You worked pretty much every job from patrol to chief.
I did. I did.
Which
it
one
all.
Did you like the most, and which one did you find most challenging?
That's a good question. Which one did I like the most? I loved being a patrol sergeant. You know, that
I
was.
I can't tell you how many people, how many chiefs tell me that, including me.
Yeah.
It's the best job in the police
department. It was. It was great. And it was, I just took so much, even, you know, over 30 years, like there were ups and downs, leaderships. There were, you know, times where the department was down, there were times we were up. But I had this whole focus on, at the squad level, making sure my officers wanted to come to work.
Mm-hmm.
We had a blast. I mean, policing's a tough job at times, but it's also a fun job. It's a rewarding job. And just being out on the street and having kind of that ability to just kind of like, you know, do our own thing and create like this really positive work environment. And being Italian, it surrounded food, so I had the peaks and valleys in my weight over the years. You know, but we enjoyed, like, you know, we would eat meals together. We would just have so much fun on the job. The one interesting thing was that I did find was unique. When I first came into the suburbs,
okay,
I grew up in a neighborhood type of environment. So Philly cops, generally speaking, my dad used to criticize the Rizzo era because they used to beat my older brothers off the corners. But in my era, I had a lot of good experiences with cops. And then when I got into the suburbs initially, there was like a significant separation from police and their community. Like officers weren't comfortable to go sit in a deli and eat a sandwich. They would, like, go hide somewhere. Because then it'd be like, oh, what are you doing? You have time to eat? Or I'm not sure what it was, but that was, like, the environment. So then over 30 years, like, I became an institution in the community. I did so many different things that I really loved. Like, when I got into running in the 90s, and I wwent up doing four marathons. But during that whole 10, 12, 15-year period, I would volunteer my time to run with the cross-country kids. Again,
okay.
Recruiting, right? Going to their district championships, things like that. And, you know, just like, I actually have a radiologist who I've sent jiu-jitsu is a hard sport. So when I've broken different things or injured different things, I have a radiologist who I ran with cross country when he was a kid that I like send him my films. He's like, all right, you're going to be okay.
That's
so
awesome. That's
so
awesome.
It's amazing the connections you make with different families and stuff like that. So
why don't we take our second break here? When we come back, we'll continue our talk with Chief Dave Scarrato of Buckingham Township PD.
Capitol Health's Primary Care Network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capitol Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Insurance can be very confusing and costly. That's why it's very important to choose the right insurance agency. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton is a fourth-generation family-owned insurance agency with over 100 years of experience. They'll find the best policy for maximum protection at the best price. Homeowners, business, life, auto, even flood insurance. Peter Toft at Nottingham Insurance will make getting your policies, including flood insurance, an easy and affordable process. Nottingham Insurance in Yardley and Hamilton. Visit nottinghaminsurance.com or call Peter Toft directly at 215-493-1996, extension 214. That's 215-493-1996. Extension 214.
Hey, this is Jonesy. Kick off your Thursday and Friday evenings in style. Join me for an eclectic freeform mix of the hits and beyond. It's a happening, a musical journey. It's the Glenn Jones Radio Experience right here on 1490 WBCB and 107.3 FM. Thursday and Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. directly following the legendary Jerry Blavitt. Radio the way it ought to be.
We now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, WBCB, September 2025, 1490 AM, 107.3 FM. And Steve, you threw me off with that. You used my old song, which made me think we were coming on earlier, and then my new song came on, so... You worked, Chief, you worked 20 years in Montgomery County SWAT. That is a long time to be on the SWAT team. What experience prepared you for that high-pressure decision-making in SWAT, or what training prepared you for that?
Well, I think for me, initially, obviously, my military training helped. You know, there is something to be said for basic training. The police academy, I did a Fort Dix. After you get out of the security police academy in Texas, they send you to an army base, and you do air base ground defense. So I had a lot of experience in those
areas. And now
areas.
Dix is both, right? Dix is combined.
Yes. Now Dix and McGuire was right next door, so now it's a combined base. So that was kind of a big piece of it, was that. But then, you know, there was a basic SWAT school that we went through with Abington. You know, I think I always had a good aptitude for that, and I felt comfortable in that environment. So, it was something that I had, you know, I was just one of those people.
We had a full-time emergency service unit at New Jersey Transit when I was there. So you guys are a different breed, right? You're adrenaline junkies.
Yeah.
I always am amazed that when that stops, like, was that a tough adjustment when you were no longer going on SWAT jobs?
I can give you two adjustments. One was the first time I ever felt fear was after I had my, like, noticeable fear was after my daughter was born. So after, it was the first time ever my pager, you know, you remember those pager things? Those little boxes that used to be.
Yeah. Steve does it, but you and I do.
So,
Steve, did you have a pager?
That's how we used to get called out on the SWAT team, and right before we got Nextels. And then, so I always remember my first call out for a barricaded gunman, and it was the first time I was ever like, all of a sudden I had something else to live for. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first moment in SWAT where I was like, I got to think about this a little more. And maybe a little more cautious. And then after that, in 2016, I became detective sergeant.
Okay.
And at my old place, that was third in command of the police department. It was kind of like quasi. You ran a caseload. Mm-hmm. You ran all detectives. We also did some administrative. That was what catapulted me towards the chief's position was I had a lot of administrative opportunities, did some grants, and I showed things that we could do as a modern agency of our size, and that kind of turned into that. But within a few months of being a detective sergeant, I realized as I would pick up cases that were time sensitive, you had to move on. And I recognized, look, I cannot dedicate two full days a month or a day and a half a month to SWAT.
Okay.
And then, you know, if some, you know, a sexual assault case came in or, you know, a robbery, anything of import that you got to run on, I couldn't justify walking away from that for a day of training. So my mom, you know, it would just drive me crazy, like if I had this case sitting and I'm at SWAT training. So that was kind of when I knew. Mm-hmm. So what I did do, though, was to keep myself, you know, to make it a transition, I decided to become a hostage negotiator. So, you know, and then I would have to joke to SWAT guys, like when I teach mandatory updates, I was like, I used to be SWAT, and I would say, well, I'm a negotiator. Does that count? And like they would all go, no. And you know, so it's an ongoing joke. But so I had a transition. I went from
Didn't go cold turkey.
No, I didn't
you
go
went
cold
halfway
turkey.
Out.
I went half. Out. Yeah, I went halfway out. Then I did 3 years in negotiation, and then when I got promoted to chief, I finally stepped away from SWAT completely.
You hit on something that I find important. I think strong police departments, because I've been in a few now, are when they move someone up or into something else, they should give up where they came from, right? Mm-hmm. Some departments, it's easier just to tell the guy he can just stay everywhere and do everything. But I think it's important. I came from a very, very big department in New Jersey where I had a whole bunch of functions as a sergeant. And then as I moved up to lieutenant, I had to give up some of those things. I think that's so important because otherwise then you have a small group of people doing everything, and everyone else becomes disenchanted. Have you experienced anything like that?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, and really, it's been said forever. Right? What do we say? We're supposed to be spending all of our time preparing our replacement. Mm-hmm. So when I walked away from Lower Moreland, my lieutenant became the chief.
Good.
There was no search. There was none of that. It was a very clear, prepared, apprenticed, you know, succession plan. And that's what a healthy organization does. And that's what I've been talking about for a very long time. And, you know, I had a unique, my wife just became a physician. So, well,
congratulations.
So for the last 4 years, she was in residency, three of which she lived in Texas. And so during my last few years at Lower Moreland, I was testing all around the country for chief's position, multiple in Texas. And then my wife woke up one day, because I was a finalist at several different departments. One was City of Farmers Branch. It was about 90 officers, assistant chiefs for Little Elm. I was actually a finalist, runner-up for Gainesville, Florida. So,
is that the one that published the name of all the... I know there was a Florida...
Yeah.
That
yeah.
published all the applicants' names?
Oh, no, that was, they did that to me, too. That was, I think it was Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Fort Lauderdale or Fort Myers, one of those. Published everything.
Very nice of you. Yeah. You didn't give me the job, plus you put my name in the paper.
Yeah, well, I was in the rare position of my manager and I were on the same page. He knew, you know, I
right,
wanted
right,
to pursue
yeah.
my family, yeah. so I didn't have that worry. But, yeah, there were a lot of unhappy chiefs out there. But anyway, those opportunities, and when I was testing for those opportunities, I was, you know, selling that. Like, mm-hmm. we need to help the organizations. Like, you know, if you're just going to keep taking all your roles with you, you know, you're just creating a dysfunctional agency behind you.
And I said the same thing when I came here. One of my goals is that I'm the last chief you ever hire from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that the people who follow me are prepared to do, I believe you should do the job, be able to do the job every day of one rank above you and two ranks below you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that 1,000%. Yep, and I feel the same way.
You've conducted a number of comprehensive staffing analysis for police departments,
yeah.
something most chiefs dread.
Yeah.
Right? So what have you learned about an effective police force from some of these staffing studies?
Well, the biggest thing is every place is unique. So you cannot just simply, it's not cookie cutter, mm-hmm. it's not, you know, you have to really analyze the agency, the community, what the community expectations are, what the community needs are. It's an all-above approach, and there's no simple formulas. You know, the old population equals this doesn't work. You know, there's just so many factors in the policing that when it comes to staffing analysis, the best staffing analysis looks at a whole wide array of things. And the best are work-based mm-hmm. models that take into account calls for service, roadways that you have to patrol, type of community. Like, you know, I mean, give you, you know, a lot of different examples where, you know, depending on if you Lower Moreland, where I came from, was like a bedroom community. We have very little retail, almost all residential. But then we also had a lot of pressure coming from the neighborhoods in Northeast Philly. We were able to identify that, you know, like 70% of our crime was coming from five neighborhoods in the whole of city of Philadelphia. we also did focus groups with community members, see what they wanted. We were able to identify that community policing was something really desired,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have the staffing to do that.
Okay.
Because we were too busy. Over the years, we had gotten too busy to also have people doing that. So that's really the thing, is really understanding the community, the needs, the wants, the desires, the makeup, the geography. It's, you have to look at everything. You can't look at any simple approach.
And I think what people need to realize with any type of study about a police department is that the information you draw from that, or the conclusions you draw, the to-do list, it's perishable, right? Like, mm-hmm. 2 years from now, if you're still working off that old report,
mm-hmm.
you're probably not doing the department a service.
Correct.
And that's frequently overlooked.
Yeah, it's important for, you know, our elected officials to, you know, they hire good experts and then trust those experts with the information that they provide you.
Well put.
And our job as experts or as the professional leader is to have them be comfortable that there is no agenda, that it's the only desire we have is to provide the best police service to that community, which is what it deserves, mm-hmm. you know, which all communities deserve.
Why don't we take our last break now, Stephen, and when we come back, I want to talk to the chief a little bit about traffic enforcement and traffic safety.
Capital Health's primary care network continues to grow, bringing its extensive option of locations to your neighborhood. Whether you're scheduling a wellness checkup or not feeling well, advanced medicine starts with a Capital Health primary care doctor at locations near you in Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties. To find a Capital Health primary care location that's convenient for you, visit capitalmedicalgroup.org. That's capitalmedicalgroup.org.
Sandy's Beef and Ale has been serving famous hand-carved roast beef sandwiches since 1967. Sandy's Beef and Ale is located in the Woodburn Square Shopping Center right off Lincoln Highway at Woodburn Road. Drop in anytime, not only for the roast beef sandwiches, but also for the tailgater and the Cuban. Family and friends have been coming to Sandy's Beef and Ale since 1967. Stop in for the original hand-carved sandwich, live music, and watch your Philadelphia sports teams all season long. Sandy's Beef and Ale in the Woodburn Square Shopping Center off Lincoln Highway at Woodburn Road.
We now return to Bucks Blue with Lower Makefield Police Chief Joe Kelly, brought to you by Jammer Doors.
And welcome back to Bucks Blue, WBCB 1490 AM 107.3 FM, September 2025 Bucks Blue Show, in studio with Chief Dave Scarano of the Buckingham Township Police Department. And before I went to break, I alluded that I was going to talk to the chief a little bit about traffic safety, because in multiple departments, you've expanded the traffic safety unit.
Absolutely.
I'd like to hear a little bit about how you feel about why that's so important, number one, and number two, the intersection of traffic safety and criminal investigations.
Traffic safety, all of our inner ring suburbs have traffic safety issues, specifically because these roads were never designed for the amount of traffic that they get. And basically, we've spent all these years playing catch up. Our population expanded, mm-hmm. Our suburbs sprawled, and the infrastructure wasn't prepared for it. So then the other part is, when we live in these nice communities, what are the priorities of our citizenry? Well, they want their children to come to and from school safely. They want them to be able to get home safely. They want safe roads to drive on. They would love less congestion. I don't know if we can deliver on all that, but some of that's beyond our control. But really, it's about public safety, right? And ensuring that roads are safe and people are driving at appropriate speeds. And we learned over the years about seatbelt safety. I ran several grants related to aggressive driving and seatbelt safety because we found these things work. So how do you get, I have this lecture all the time with officers is, warnings are a wonderful thing. However, when it comes to traffic safety, to change that, you can get maybe 85% compliance for traffic laws and things like that with being out there, being visible, mm-hmm. making stops, things like that. But ultimately, that last 10% to really make a difference, to make a dent, is enforcement. That's why our governments spend this money into grants to provide opportunities for us to do more of that. So that's one big piece of it, is the safe roads is what, a good, safe community wants, is safe roads. The intersection with crime is, there's a lot of crime traversing our communities. One of the common things you'll hear out here in these beautiful suburban communities that we live in and work in is that, a lot of our crime doesn't come from here. It's transitional crime. It's transient crime. It's people passing through. Mm-hmm. Buckingham's an example where if you look at the 202 corridor, it's a corridor that goes from Philadelphia to New York. And any of those I-95, that's why these main routes are always, locations where people involved in criminal activity are going to travel. The other part is if you have a community that has a low crime rate internally, but you have people from outside the community coming inside, the only way to identify those people is through traffic enforcement. So having skilled officers that are doing a good job keeping our streets safe traffic-wise, they also are going to inevitably come across You know, people that are entering our communities to do, you know, ill will. So, it, you know, and then there's the visibility of it. There's no greater deterrence than a police car with its lights on a road, right? So if our officers are out there doing good traffic work, keeping communities' roadways safe, they're also a beacon of light for those coming into our communities that maybe are looking for property crime opportunities and things like that. And then they see, oh God, every road I go on, I see a Lower Makefield police officer with a car stop. I think I'll go to, you know, I won't call out any other communities, but I'll go to that next community over to make, you know, make an attempt at a crime. And, you know, crime is crime. Crime exists. It'll always be with us, unfortunately. And how well we do, how well we address it, how well we respond to it, how well we prevent it and deter it, that's an indication of a good police agency. So,
and I heard a stat last week. I was at the MOPEC meeting for the new police academy.
Yes.
And I heard a stat, and don't quote me on the numbers, but somebody who testified there about this region of the state said there's roughly 13 million people in the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. 7 million live in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about both traffic safety and crime, mm-hmm. we're
ground
really
zero.
Dealing with everything that's going on in the Commonwealth. How difficult is it, and we haven't talked about it on the show ever before, but I think every citizen out there who's listening to us should understand how the deck is stacked against us, because we don't have a tool that 49 states have for their municipal police officers.
So, yes.
And without pointing fingers at to why,
how
does that hamper us, and why does it hamper us?
Yeah, so those who haven't, we should like do a call-in portion, and we say, all right, someone has to guess the answer. The answer is radar.
Do you know the answer? Did you know that?
Oh, I gave it up.
Yeah, it's
did
radar.
Did you know it? All right. Yes, the radar. So, yes, that is a tool that, you know, really simplifies speed enforcement. So people, most people probably don't even, most citizenry don't even realize that, you know, the challenges with trying to do speed enforcement, we use the basically rudimentary tools of a stopwatch.
The aerobic and the
fast car. And painting lines on the ground. And we're getting there a little better with things like ESP, excessive speed preventer. There's some tools out there, but the use of the radar would really greatly benefit municipal policing and allow us to better enforce. I guess what are we using now to make up for that? Well, we got red light cameras now and some different things like that are coming down the pike, that are kind of changing that conversation again. But yeah, radar is a tool that, is simple to use. It's effective. It's efficient.
And extremely accurate.
Oh, and extremely accurate.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the things they always say when they're talking bad about radar is that, you know, the accuracy is not.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than my thumb on a stopwatch.
Well, I chuckled. I had, as chief of police at Lower Morning Township, I had money in my budget every year for radar, because I was told by an unnamed politician,
This is the year.
So I put it in the budget, and then I'm like, that year went by. I was like, all right, put it in next year. We just kept putting it in year after year.
This is the year every year.
this is the year every year.
We had a corporal in when I was in Yardley Borough
uh-huh.
that got a guy that was 60 over.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, are you sure? He goes, no, am I sure? I was using my finger
right.
over 100 feet. He could have been 80 over or 70. Like,
it's just
not there. So I don't want to end on bad news when it's talking about traffic safety. Let's talk about some of the tools that are good news that we are using not only in this county, but across the five county, the collar counties of Philadelphia, and that being license plate readers.
Oh, absolutely.
Share with our audience how that's changed the game, not only for traffic enforcement, but largely for criminal enforcement and forensics afterwards.
Yeah, so I'll Geez, well, when it comes to, like, traffic enforcement and policing, I do like to tease our young officers. It was a little harder for us back in the day.
Dave, I did the same thing.
I was like, boy, let me see. I'll turn on my computer and wait for it to tell me a car that drives by that's been expired for 9 months, you know? And
we used to have to call the dispatcher, and after three or four, the dispatcher was tired of you. So
I always told a great story. I had a sergeant back in the 90s pull me aside, and and he's like, Dave, you know, you're doing a great job, young man, and I don't want to dissuade your motivation, but, you know, the dispatcher was talking to me, and, you know, you just can't run every single tank that drives through Lower Moreland. And I was like, oh, really? but basically, that's what license plate readers do. They run all the tags on a given roadway, which is a great tool for our officers. You know, I think many of them don't take advantage of it. That being said, the crime part as a detective and detective sergeant, the cases that we solve thanks to that technology, I mean, we solve murders. You know, we solve the home invasion murder where, you know, the license plate reader put a car a block away in the middle of the night. Burglaries. Even up at Buckingham, we've had a gold bar case that's gone federal. That was, you know, all LPR technology. The amount of crimes that we're able to solve post-incident with LPR technology is amazing. So it's just, you know, that technology is just going to get better and better, and it's definitely going to make our communities a lot safer.
And I think it's really it's getting hard to be a conventional criminal. I don't want to be sympathetic towards them, but between the
cell phone,
the cell phones, the cameras, these criminals don't realize they're carrying a tracker with them.
Yeah.
That once we get a warrant, they're cooked. It's their phone, right? But cameras everywhere.
Yep.
They're on homes now, complete systems for $350.
Absolutely.
These LPRs, it's credit card.
Yeah.
Everything is data now. It's just getting really, really tough. So it's shifting to internet crime,
and it's
moving beyond.
Well, there's the disadvantage to that is, you know, most of that material and evidence isn't just given to you.
Correct. Okay. I mean, it's
a lot
I'm not
of man hours easy. Getting search warrants.
Yeah. We still have to develop the probable cause to get the warrant, but once they do, I mean, you know a lot more than we ever knew in the past.
Yeah, it's wonderful, actually.
I wanted to talk to you. We have about 4 minutes left, but I wanted to talk to you. You have a record of diversity in recruiting and valuing diversity in recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me how you do it and why it's so important.
Oh, gee, for me, my wife, who's now a doctor, was a police officer. She did.
You're gonna have to, we're not going to have enough time today, but offline you're going to have to fill me in.
So, you know, and I just remember during her young years as an officer, she would tell me stories and challenges being a woman in policing. And I would say that was kind of where it started. And then the other part is growing up in multicultural communities my whole life in Philadelphia and seeing the challenges. I mean, my first neighborhood was Fairmount, which is 25th Street down by the Art Museum. And there were a lot of racial problems in our community when I was a kid. So understanding that police officers, we are the line that can really help cut across those different things. The value of women in policing, when it comes to victims and reaching our communities and reaching our children, you know, it's just all the value of that. We are one of those fields where it makes a lot of sense. You know, we're talking about having super competent, passionate people, and people from every walk of life is exactly what police officers need. At Lower Moreland, we had a huge influx of Eastern Europeans over my 30 years. And, I mean, there's some ungodly amount of languages spoken in the Lower Moreland High School. So that really brought it home to me because over the years I saw the challenges our officers would have with Russian-speaking, Ukrainian-speaking, Kyrgyz, Kazakh, Georgians, Uzbekistanis, and we're having difficulty talking, communicating, reaching, you know, and being family immigrant from Italy. My great grandfather was immigrated here. So understanding the fear in those communities to interact with their law enforcement so they become prey. So that's why multiculturalism and having women in policing, that's the reason it's such an important aspect. So I've always had a passion for that. And, you know, when I have opportunities to recruit great people, I don't care what they look like or what gender they are, but I certainly understand the value of having people from as many different walks of life as possible in our police agencies. So,
and how's recruiting looking lately? I mean, it was, I think we're coming out of that.
I agree.
Record challenge over, I mean, we have never been in a place in law enforcement like we were in the past.
Yep.
But, so
I see it's finally starting to turn the corner, but it's the days of 1,000 people, 700 people are long away, I think. It might take us quite a long time to get back there. But with the right leadership, I think, you know, we need leaders to speak up and find unique ways. Find people with skill sets that are good for policing. I'm a huge fan of wrestlers. And have you ever met an athlete, a student athlete, that works harder than a wrestler? You know, so like those type of people, people that love to use their hands, people that know how to, that have physical skills so they don't feel a need to use other skills. Recruiting in a new, open-minded way, I think, is an important aspect of it. And, that's those. I would love to talk to you about arrest and control tactics. I'm on a committee with MOPEC. You're going to get to see my new videos with my great new hair.
They were talking about the new curriculum at the last MOPEC meeting.
Correct, and we're doing the videos at the end of this month. So I'll be in videos again, so you'll get to see me again.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing them, and our hour is up, unfortunately, but I'd love to have you back to talk about those control tactics. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, Dave. This was a very, very informative interview. And I think the people of Buckingham are in good hands with you at the helm.
Thank you.
Thanks. And that concludes Bucks Blue for September 2025.